Tell me once more what the cruelest month is.
I believe that the cruelest month is September.
Excellent. Okay. Right. That sounds good.
April. I knew it was one of those that had a P in them.
I thought winter was the cruelest month.
Digressive. Obscenity. Shit, what was I talking about?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Digressive Obscenity, or Silly Hats, the podcast. My guest today is one of my oldest friends and one of my best friends, Mr. William Pomerantz. So let's start this off correctly.
Tell me about you.
Will, who are you and what do you do?
I'm Will. I do whatever I want. I'm Will. I'm one of your best friends. I appear on podcasts. Sometimes I have to re-record them because of poor sound quality.
I don't know when that could have ever happened, ever, so... That's just weird.
During the day, mm-hmm. I work to make space exploration more affordable and more common.
You're making that up.
No, I am not.
Okay, I called your bluff, but it wasn't a bluff.
Actually,
okay.
True. It was not a bluff. It was a good try, though.
Yeah, no, I figured that, you know, I'm kind of new at the whole interviewee thing, so I figure if I just take a really aggressive like tack and just like, you're lying. And I might actually get somebody to say, you're right, I'm lying, but you weren't lying.
I admire your investigative journalism chops.
I'd say it's more of dickishness, but I'll take that. I'll take that. I can put that on a resume, and putting dickishness on a resume isn't as impressive.
Yeah, how big a difference is there, really, though?
Exactly. I mean, it's all resume speak. But okay, so you
it's
make...
all resume speak.
So you're bringing... space travel to people, and that is something you achieve by working with Virgin Galactic.
That is correct. Yes. So from the dawn of time until today, mm-hmm. 528 people have been to space. That's adding up every NASA astronaut, every Russian or Soviet cosmonaut, every Chinese taikonaut.
Okay.
And I think it's pretty cool that number is not zero, like it is for, you know, those losers, the dolphins, and a lot of other species.
Yeah, honestly.
On the other hand, if you'd asked me when I was a little kid what that number would be when 2012 rolled around, you know, I probably would have put several zeros at the end of that number.
So you thought that when you were a kid that we'd all be living on the moon at this point?
Well, you know, I watched the Jetsons like everyone else.
Of course.
I thought that we would all go to space. I watched 2001, A Space Odyssey. I even read the book version.
You thought we'd all be killed by a computer?
I thought we would all be killed by computers or would be hitting each other with cow femurs.
Or be turned into space
babies.
I may
not have understood the point of that book.
I read it when I was 6 years old, yeah.
That's right. I thought we would all get a chance to go to space. Maybe we would be going there every day, maybe we would live there, or maybe we would just go there, you know, we would commute via space, or we would go to space for our Christmas vacations, or things like that.
Gotcha.
And obviously, that has not happened. And I think fundamentally, it is not the job of the government of NASA or of its equivalents in other countries to make it so that all of us can go to space. That would be weird. There's no real analogy for the government doing that. The government has blazed a trail and shown us that it is possible and developed a lot of the technologies and helped us learn how to make it safer.
Yeah.
And so now private companies like mine, Virgin Galactic, are going out and bringing that technology to play in a way that people can just buy a ticket to go. And that includes people who maybe, no matter how smart, hardworking, dedicated, successful they were, would never have been eligible to be a NASA astronaut because they have something like bad vision or are tall.
So right now, I could reserve a place on... I'm sorry, and so it's one shuttle that goes up? It's Spaceship 2 or Spaceship 1?
So we have a vehicle called Spaceship 2.
Spaceship 2.
Very creatively named. The prototype vehicle was called Spaceship One, and that successfully flew to space a couple times in 2004. Mm-hmm. It now hangs in the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Spaceship Two is essentially a bigger, better, more comfortable version of the same thing, or at least based on the same design, same technologies, but scaled up and improved.
And it's also painted hot
pink. You could buy your ticket now.
Okay. $200,000.
$200,000 a person,
mm-hmm.
Which, while certainly still expensive, is an awful lot cheaper than the next cheapest option out there on the market. a lot cheaper than anyone else has ever gone to space, excepting the Spaceship One pilots, of course. And yeah, you can go to space, which is pretty awesome. You can go whether you're just going for fun, which is certainly true of a lot of our customers, or if you're going for a research, an education, a science or a technology kind of a mission, which is something that I personally get to work on, making sure that these vehicles, while they are for tourism, aren't just for tourism. They're also for those STEM kind of research and education fields.
Gotcha. Okay, so basically your title is Vice President of Special Projects at Virgin Galactic.
Correct.
Okay, and so what is an average day? Today, what did you do? Unless, nothing, top secret, obviously. But what did you do today at Virgin Galactic?
Every day is pretty different, which I enjoy. Cool. VP for Special Projects is a fairly nebulous title, which is convenient and entertaining. But broadly speaking, I get to work on developing all the parts of the company that are not the space tourism part. We've got a great team of people who've been working for a long time to make sure that our space tourism customers are happy, that the vehicles that we build give them the kind of experience that they expect, not only in terms of safety, but also in terms of sort of the quality of the experience, the level of comfort, the view out the window, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
I get to think about how we take the technologies that we've developed, the vehicles that we've developed, the personnel, the facilities, and we use them for additional purposes. So as I mentioned, it's trying to find a way to use the same vehicles as a research platform, which sort of speaks to my background. I come from Earth and Planetary Sciences, and that's a field where you don't get that many opportunities to do a new experiment. Hopefully, yeah, with a vehicle like Spaceship Two that flies frequently and affordably, you get lots of opportunities to do those experiments. We also have just announced a new vehicle based on similar technologies and using a lot of the same components that will launch small satellites into space, into all the way to orbit, for prices a lot lower than they've been able to get them up.
And that's not for people. That's just for objects, or like for satellites.
That's for satellites, not for humans.
Can I guess? And you don't have to tell me from right or wrong. Can I guess the name?
Go for it. Bring it on.
Satellite Launcher One.
Oh, so close! You just got to drop the word satellite.
Launcher One.
Launcher One.
For real, I guessed it. It's Launcher One.
That is correct.
Oh man, this is also something I love about this so much. It's like this company allows people to go to outer space, but they really have two vehicles named Spaceship One and Spaceship Two. But you know what? Hey, on the other hand, though, it works because you're doing such crazy, amazing sci-fi shit that it's like you can call it Launcher One, because it launches satellites into space. You can call it Spaceship One, because when you really get down to it, like, even back in the 50s, spaceship is a pretty cool word. And the fact that it is actually a spaceship, that's okay that you can call it Spaceship One. So let them know.
It's effective.
It's effective.
Gets the point across.
Exactly. And it's better than, like, Nokia presents the rubber rocket or something awful.
I'm writing that one down here. Hold on a second.
No, patent pending. Patent pending.
Presents rubber rocket.
Note on Spaceship 3, make it out of rubber. Damn, I just made you guys quite a bit of money, didn't I? Damn it. Okay, that was my fault. Okay, so moving on to the questions portion.
Questions. Stop asking me questions.
What is your first memory of me, Will?
My first memory of you, Paul.
Yes.
Would be seeing you from a distance, as previously alluded to. You are tall.
Again, corridors. I can't qualify that. So, but I'm not going to argue with you because you are a guest. I've invited you here. I'm not going to argue with you. Okay, I'm tall. In quotes. Okay, please continue.
Very gentlemanly of you.
I try to be.
It would be seeing you in the corridors, the indoor corridors, I believe, if memory serves, of our high school.
I remember that.
Wearing sunglasses inside.
Okay. And going further, one of your first thoughts of me, even though today we are and have been very, very good friends for a while. In fact, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that you and I, as well as a handful of others, have known each other longer than we have not. Is that true? Or just about?
Just about, yeah. We're like right on that. Yeah, we're probably like right at that line.
Yeah, because there's only one other person, which is Lisa McMullen, also from high school, that I have officially known her longer than I have not. And, you know, that's a big thing. That's an epic thing.
It's, we're like within a few months of either having just crossed that milestone or just about to cross that milestone. Nice.
But yeah, so going back, so even though we have known each other an incredibly long time and we are very close friends, one of your first thoughts of me was along the lines of what kind of asshole would wear sunglasses inside?
Paul, you were wearing sunglasses inside in high school. Of course I thought that.
Okay, just checking. You didn't, at no point did you think, this guy is really stylish.
At no point did I think, this guy probably just had a series of radical eye surgeries.
Okay, that, you know, that's fair. We can move on from here.
I don't know why that didn't spring to mind immediately.
And yeah, well, that's good. That's always good to know that. It's good to know that we've grown from there, because I'm sure that there are a lot of people in high school that I remember my first thought of them was, wow, what an asshole. And it never went beyond that.
And you were right in those instances.
Exactly, yeah. There wasn't like a getting to know you period of like, wow, this football player really does have depth and personality. No, he's just an asshole who's repressing a lot of homosexuality. So, all right, so moving on to the second question. What is your favorite moment or favorite episode of The Simpsons? It's a popular animated television series with yellow characters, four fingers usually.
Is this like, don't have a cow man, cowabunga?
Yes, that is exactly.
Eat
yes.
My shorts.
Eat my shorts is basically, I mean, those three lines pretty much sum up the show, yes.
I'm going to go with, this may come as a shock to you. I'm going to go with the episode where Homer Simpson is selected as NASA's average nut.
Mm-hmm.
And gets to go to space.
That is a good one. And just as a quick aside, was that an actual thing? Were they lampooning that? Or was that an actual... Did they make that up? Or did NASA at one point say, hey, we should send a totally average person to space?
NASA has never had the average not program. They have had, like, teacher in space, although those teachers were extraordinary people.
Gotcha.
They were getting ready to do... like journalist in space and some other things like that in the early 80s.
Okay.
Prior to the Challenger mm-hmm. disaster.
Yeah.
And the closest thing I can think of is South Korea, which has had an astronaut now, essentially picked their astronaut, who, by the way, is a charming and remarkable woman, cool. Via a reality television show type competition among the best and brightest in South Korea. So again, not exactly... average not, but not your traditional NASA selection process either.
Gotcha. So we're not talking Jersey Shore. We're talking about like what's that show? The Ninja Show.
I'm just going to go with yes. I don't know what show you're referring to.
It's basically like a show where some of the most like fit people in the world do these ridiculous obstacle courses that are basically training them to be ninjas. Like they climb up a 30-foot sheer wall with momentum and their elbows or something. But so it's not basically the fatter and stupider you are, the more you're going to win. These people actually had to go through physical training. It just happened to be on camera. And at the end, they were rewarded, not with money, but with you get to go to space.
It was probably like the math and science version of that.
Nice. Okay, well, that's cool. But yeah, that is definitely an excellent episode.
Classic.
It is classic, yeah. That's. I feel like everything in the... I'd say like from season 4 to season 10? Season 4 to season 9 is kind of the strongest years, I think, about then.
I would argue that Homer Average Not episode has one of the most widely quoted Simpsons lines Ooh. Of all time.
Which is
when the ant farm on the space shuttle has been broken or over-ended or whatever it was, and the ants are floating free, and they, some of them float directly in front of the television camera.
Yeah.
And then Kent Brockman says, "I, for one, welcome our new ant overlords."
That is a really good one. I don't know. In a show that's so easily quotable and so overly quoted, I mean, who could really say? But that's definitely up there. That's always a fun one.
What would, in your opinion, being more of a Simpsons trivia aficionado than I, what would you say is the most widely quoted Simpsons line? I mean, that's got to be up there, maybe with like best episode ever kind of comic book guy type lines.
Exactly. You know, it's not even trivia. I just watched them so much that it was, I don't know, I guess one of the most prevalent. I think Ralph, I could probably say Ralph Wiggum is probably one of the most overquoted characters, because everything he says is like, you don't even need a context sometimes. It's just really brilliant stupidity. So, I mean, I couldn't say what his most quoted line is, but I don't know. It's one of those shows where I'm happy I can't point to a direct, like, oh, this is the best right here. I'm glad that it's not a qualitative, like, oh, this is obviously the best, you know? So.
Right.
Yeah. But excellent. Okay. What are you listening to right now? I know that you have, you are in the Los Angeles area, and that you do have access to Amoeba Records, which, again, thank you for taking me there. It was just wide-eyed, slack-jawed wonder at how cool that place was. But you frequent it often, and I believe you went there for your birthday, and you got a fat stack, I believe the kids call it, of the compact discs.
I do try and frequent that store as often as I can, and I have to go there on a budget, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. But so what are you spinning right now? What are you enjoying?
All kinds of stuff. I kind of have eclectic musical tastes.
Yes, indeed.
Lately, I've been trying to assemble my my latest entry in our CD mixtape club, which is at this point still classified. I can't tell you what's going to be on that, but
I'm looking forward to it.
Work out well.
Absolutely, yeah. Your entry to the first version was definitely, I was definitely up there, man. The time and the thought put into it. It was less of a mix CD and more of a, I don't know. It was a journey, but yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to
that.
Concept album. Thank you. It was a concept album, but I'm definitely.
This one.
Can you give us?
Hopefully, match up with that.
Wow, that's quite a promise.
Then yeah, kind of a random assortment of stuff. The next concert I'm going to, I want to say, is Gary Clark Jr., who's pretty awesome. I saw him at Newport Folk Festival this year.
Okay.
The last concert I went to, I think, was Gabby Moreno, who's a Guatemalan singer-songwriter, awesome musician. Really cool. Great show.
You didn't make it out to you weren't able to make it out to the David Byrne St. Vincent thing?
I was not able to make it out to the David Byrne St. Vincent thing. In fact, I believe I ended up going out of town. Present in Los Angeles on
if
that
you, if you ever do get a chance, I mean, definitely listen to the album. It's exactly what it should be. And if they ever come back around, which I'd be stunned if they didn't keep going with this tour, it was enthralling. It was great. Like, I really don't like going to concerts of bands that I don't know every single song. But this one was just, it was fantastic. I do not regret a moment of it. It was amazing.
It's on my list of things to pick up next time I'm at Amoeba.
Excellent. I hope you enjoy it. And actually, I should take a second here to say that you are directly responsible for getting me into what is one of my absolute favorite bands, They Might Be Giants.
It's true. I did take you to a concert.
Wow.
Your first of quite a large number.
I'd say under 60 at this point, which apparently is a lot.
As
the front row of UCLA.
So
man, whatever. I'm still not willing to accept defeat on that one. It was just a bunch of college students who happened to get discount tickets because they went to the school. Ah.
It was their, what?
First. first or second.
30th anniversary show?
30th anniversary show. They've been together for 30 years playing live. The front row at their 30th anniversary show. Oh yeah, this is my first concert here. And we were in
there
what?
There was a guy in that row who had been to like 80. But you said someone in that row was going to have been to, was it 300 plus that you said?
300 plus. And
that was incorrect.
And it was incorrect. And I'm still seething over that. And I still maintain that that is a relative, that me having seen They Might Be Giants 60 times or so is still, it's a relatively big number. Relative. And let's say no more of it. Ugh. I'm not angry at you. I'm angry at everyone who thinks that that's... never mind.
You're angry at the world.
Thank you. I'm angry at the world for not accepting that. Okay. All right, so that's what you're listening to. What are you watching right now? Or have you seen any good movies lately? Or have you wrapped anything up?
I'm sort of between things in terms of watching. Mm-hmm. As you know, I don't have television signal. I do the Netflix thing and the Hulu thing.
Yes.
So my wife and I were perennially sort of like 5 to 10 years behind on things. So we just finished off Battlestar Galactica, which I guess actually isn't quite 5 years yet, is it? Since that show finished.
Some time has definitely passed. I don't really know.
So we enjoyed that show, albeit I thought the last season a little weak.
Yeah, there were definitely stretches.
We're in the midst of looking for a new show to watch routinely, and ticking off. I discovered recently that my lovely wife, who was not raised in this country,
yes,
has in fact never seen any of the James Bond movies prior to the Pierce Brosnan era. I believe.
Oh wow, that's excellent.
We've been going back, and we actually like just started, so we just did Dr. No.
Wonderful. I'm actually just watching the Timothy Dalton ones again, so I can write some reviews for them, and I'm going to try and wrap up before the new one comes out.
Well, the internet was pretty frustrated and upset that you had not finished your reviews. So,
as was I. As was I.
Let us all be grateful that those have resumed.
Yes. So it may take a little time, but... it may take a little time because up until the Timothy Dalton ones, there's a lot of cheese. There's a lot of cheesy lines and writing, and the villains are ridiculous caricatures of just... They are what stereotypes are based on later in life. But the Timothy Dalton ones are the darkest ever, aside from the Daniel Craig ones. Like, a lot of stuff is going wrong in those. I mean, and there's a couple puns, but it's like right after he's done something truly horrible to a human being.
I have to say, I had not seen Dr. No since like the early 90s.
Nice.
And going back and rewatching it, I had not noticed how much the first Austin Powers movie draws specifically, not just from James Bond, but specifically from Dr. No.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If you've actually seen all the James Bond movies, the Austin Powers movies get both better and worse. Because they get better because it's like, wow, what a great reference. On the other hand, it's like, you did so little work.
Right.
Wow. You did so little work. Mike Myers. Hey, no, let's just make him really fat. Okay. But that's excellent that you guys are going through that. And is Diana enjoying them, or is it...
It's a movie starring Sean Connery. What's not to like?
Very good point. Oh, man, that guy. Whew. I recommend, actually, before you go on to the next Bond, once you've finished Sean Connery's movies, you should see if you can get your hands on Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Have you ever heard of that?
I don't believe that I have.
It is a Disney film from early 60s or maybe the late 50s. It was before Dr. No, and it stars Sean Connery, Sean Scottish Connery, doing an Irish accent, but not really, and he sings in it, and it's adorable. And there are leprechauns, and there's a banshee, and you really need to watch it as juxtaposition to the Bond movies. Absolutely.
I will add it to my list. Yes. Actually, can I ask you for another media recommendation?
Yeah,
that
sure.
Allowed? My blushing bride and I are about to do a vacation that is based around a week-long road trip. Mm-hmm. Looking for some things to listen to in the car. Specifically, since I'm pretty well set on the music front, looking for some, maybe some comedy to put on the MP3 player.
Any recommendations?
I've been thinking, you know, sort of like the Tig Notaro thing that's been getting all the buzz. Heard a little bit of that. Going to try for that.
I'm not familiar with that. I can tell you anything. Eddie Izzard, obviously, is always wonderful.
He's working on some new material here at Largo.
I saw that. You lucky bastard. Did you get to see him again?
He's always we saw him together. What, that was 9 months ago now.
January, yeah.
I've not been back to see him since then. He always seems to come to Largo when I'm either out of town or have work events in the evening or whatever.
I think that's because you took his picture at the Largo.
I may still be in trouble for that. They may have hacked into my calendar. It's punitive scheduling.
Yeah, wow. That is paranoia, my friend. I'd say anything at all, Eddie Izzard is great. Patton Oswalt is one of my favorite comics. He has an album that's 222 minutes. It's called, coincidentally, 222, which is great. And there was one bit where
That's a lot of minutes.
It really is. Well, it's they recorded like an hour of it for a show, and then he just released the whole thing. Because while it's not all amazing, it is all funny. And there's certain things on it that the first time I heard it, I almost choked to death because I was laughing so hard. So definitely anything by Patton Oswalt is good. Michael Ian Black has a comedy album called I'm a Wonderful Man, which is excellent. So these are the comics that when I hear them, like, for the first time, I have trouble not laughing out loud in public. Because they have it down, and they know exactly what they're doing. Zach Galifianakis is also amazing. So,
frankly, I'm surprised that you try to not laugh.
I'm talking about, like, bursting out laughing. I'm not talking about chuckling. I'm talking about laughing uncontrollably on a crowded subway while, you know... And as you have pointed out, and I'm not going to concede this point yet, I am tall. So especially in the winter months when I tend to wear a long black leather trench coat and I'm, you know, a clear foot or two above the crowds in a subway, me laughing maniacally, it's going to spook the cattle. So that's why I try not to laugh out loud in public. But with these albums that I've mentioned, I've had trouble not laughing out loud. Because they're just really, really great. I'd say if you had to pick one, I'd say Patton Oswalt. Anything and everything of his is just really funny. I was lucky enough to see him at Caroline's, which is a famous comedy club in New York. There were 3 points in the show where I was out of breath because I was laughing too hard. I could not pull air into my lungs because I was laughing so hard. And now that I've oversold him, you probably won't enjoy him at all.
Gonna hate it.
Yeah.
Gonna hate it.
So avoid those. I gotta learn to pull back on the hyperbole occasionally. Okay, so speaking of hyperbole, so what are you reading right now?
Well, since I can't yet read The Human Revolt, the feel-good hit of Christmas 2012, I am reading a spot of nonfiction. I'm reading a book... an autobiography of a gentleman named Eric Brown, who's a very famous, at least famous in the UK, test pilot from the World War II era and beyond. Uh-huh. This was the kind of guy that when the British troops, or more broadly, the Allied troops, would capture an enemy aircraft, and they would have this plane and they wouldn't know how to fly it or what to do with it, they would give it to him and say, "Why don't you fly this thing that we don't have any manuals or instructions for? You speak German, figure it out, and tell us what the plane can and cannot do so that we can more effectively shoot them down."
And he said yes to these things. He didn't lose a bet.
And he lived through it. No, he did it and he enjoyed it.
Okay, so Eric Brown, so he sounds pretty ballsy.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying his autobiography.
Excellent. Okay, so do you have any allergies?
None really to speak of, thankfully.
Excellent, yeah. And do you collect anything intentionally?
Do I collect anything intentionally? Yeah. Well, music, probably. I'm still one of those weird people who buys my music, A, exclusively in album form, and B, essentially exclusively in physical form.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Don't really do the downloading unless I can't get it in CD form. Mm-hmm. I have not yet ventured into vinyl for fear that I would bankrupt myself.
Yeah. That's the same kind of problem I had with vinyl. As soon as we got a record player, rather than going for all this unreleased stuff, I basically bought vinyl copies of everything that I had already had, mainly...
My exact concern.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. Mainly for the 12x12 artwork, because I still love the artwork. I love buying a CD. Like, actually, just recently, one of the last CDs I purchased was the St. Vincent-David Byrne collaboration, Love This Giant, and I thought it was just going to be a CD, and then it's basically just a pouch with five pieces of cardboard in it. Each one is a picture, and then, like, there's a CD in there somewhere. And it was the most novel packaging I've seen in years. And you don't get that anymore. You know, it's a jewel box, or it's, you know, so little effort is put into these things. But I think it's because, like you said, people don't buy albums anymore. They say, oh, what are the best three songs off it? Okay, just give me that. And then the artists say, oh, okay, they're only buying these three songs, so let's just make an album with three good songs, and the rest of it doesn't really matter. And it's just this vicious cycle that people who actually buy albums, who are interested in an entire experience and not just a 3.5-minute single, we kind of get fucked over. And that's, I don't know. I don't know how to turn that around. I wish I had some sort of a solution to this, but, I mean, I have an iPod, too. I'll hit shuffle every once in a while, but I will definitely still sit down with an album when I get it and take the whole thing in because, you know, the artists I like, they make albums. They don't make a collection of songs, usually.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Preaching to the choir. But, yeah, I do remember you always had you had that windowsill in D.C. that was just completely lined with discs.
Literally wall to wall.
Wall to wall. Okay, and if you could have one actor or actress disappeared, gone forever, who would it be and why?
Actor or actress, yes. Not more broadly entertainer?
You know, hey, entertainer, yeah.
Mandy Moore.
Mandy Moore. Oh, Mandy Moore. She's a kind of like a Britney Spears kind of pop singer.
She was a guest judge on a music television MTV program.
Okay.
And exhibited, let me say, some extremely poor taste.
Okay. And for that,
the fact for which she has never been forgiven, at least not by me.
And for this, you would have her erased from the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I respect your decision. Okay. So now we're going to digress a little bit. What? What afternoon cartoons did you watch as a child? Anything that pops up?
You know, the classics. Mm-hmm. The Transformers.
Nice.
You know. Yeah. At another time, Thundercats.
Ah, yes.
The He-Man, Masters of the Universe.
That was a solid show. Yeah.
Nothing. I believe I had a birthday where I literally received nothing except for He-Man figurines.
That's awesome.
That would be like my third birthday or something in that realm.
That's excellent. Those were some really well-made toys, and they had so many of them.
They sure did.
Wow. Did you ever have any of the play sets? I had the Castle Eternia play set.
I feel like I had a Castle Grayskull.
Nice. You gotta have that. And actually, so speaking real quick of Thundercats, again, I may have this wrong. You know someone whose father sang the Thundercats theme. Is that correct, or am I just making this up? Is this more hyperbole?
I feel like I knew some, or like I met someone.
Yeah, it was like a friend of a friend.
Yes, I feel like I once upon a time met someone who held a distinction like that.
Yes.
I want to say it was like a college roommate's high school girlfriend's father or something along those lines.
Gotcha. Okay, so that I may have diffused a bit, but you do, or you did know the redhead that shreds the cello. or you know someone that knows directly the redhead that shreds the cello from the Weezer song El Scorcho.
Well, yes, Rivers, fellow Harvard guy.
Yes.
The half Japanese girl, I believe, is actually the is the one.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes, yes. So you knew the half Japanese girl.
I think there may have been an extra step involved there.
But, gotcha.
Because I think they were a little older than I was.
Gotcha.
Or at least they were at Harvard a little bit before I was. So I think there was, a degree removed there.
Gotcha. Okay, again, this is, it's good to put this on track because I do, from time to time, will have a problem with hyperbole.
What?
I know. I'm tall and I have a problem with hyperbole. I think it might be, again, I'm not conceding the point, it might be my height which lends to the hyperbole. You know, he's so tall that everything else has to be, grand and big and, oh yeah, my friend knows River Cuomo, all that stuff. But it's good to keep these things on track.
Because you're so tall.
Exactly. Which again, I'm not conceding the point.
Fair
enough. Yeah. Okay. Do you have any crazy, creepy homeless people stories?
My crazy, creepy homeless person story involves you, Times Square, and a bottle of Snapple.
Yeah, that was Let's do a quick recap. So, you and our other good friend, our other very good friend, Philip Tucker, were visiting me in New York City when I was at Fordham. And rather than sign you in and take the $20 fine for signing someone in after 11 o'clock, I said, no, I'm not going to pay $20. I'm a college student. That's, 3 weeks of food. So what we're going to do is we're going to stay out all night until 6 a.m. when people are allowed to come and go as they please. So on our magical journey, we had a lot of strange encounters. One of them happened at about 4 o'clock in the morning in Times Square, which I cannot believe it was vacant, but it was vacant. And long story short, a gentleman coming the opposite direction made contact with one of us, dropped a paper bag with a glass bottle in it, and then proceeded to try and take money from us with the threat of maybe having something in his pocket. And
he insinuated that the bottle we had broken, clearly a Snapple bottle,
clearly
labeled
Snapple.
As such.
Yes.
He insinuated it was, I want to say, a brand new bottle of vodka.
I think bottle of vodka, yeah.
And that we had bumped into him and forced him to drop it, and so therefore he was
entitled to
do some recompense.
Recompense, exactly, yeah. And then I think you gave him $3, which, again,
I pulled out from my wallet.
With your bank statement.
Without opening my wallet or taking it out of my pocket,
uh-huh.
$1 bill at a time, I pulled out, I want to say, a single dollar, and I said, no, you don't want that. Pulled out another single dollar, no, you don't want that either. Pulled out a third single dollar, because I also was a college student.
Exactly, yeah.
And said, yeah, here you go.
Yeah. And I guess, I don't buy a lot of vodka, but $3 is, that's about the price of a good bottle of vodka?
It's about the price of a Snapple.
Excellent, okay. And then of course, on the next block, we were planning on our revenge. And then some other guy was just panhandling and said, hey, do you guys have any money? And we say, no, we just gave it to this guy whose bottle we broke. And he laughed and laughed, and he said, oh, you fell for the bottle trick.
It was good times.
It was good times. Okay, yeah. So, duodenum or duodenum?
Duodenum.
Duodenum, okay. That seems to be kind of the popular answer. What is your zombie apocalypse escape plan? Who would you want with you? Where would you go and why?
You, because I can think of no one better prepared.
Wow. You don't think that the reduced night vision would be a... as I'm saying this, I can picture you just saying no, because I would just throw you to the zombies. Is that
no? Because you are nocturnal, Paul.
Ah, okay. I support that answer better. And where would we go?
Amoeba.
Oh yeah, that's right. That is, you did mention that as like the perfect zombie hideout, even though there's a lot of plate glass windows there.
Let's be honest, we're going to die at some point.
True. Well, yeah, I mean, the goal is obviously to, you know, not, or to not as long as you can.
But you may as well, like, you know, have as much fun as you can.
Oh, okay,
learn something
so...
new.
Okay, so it's less of a fortress and more of a let's listen to as much music as we can before we're eventually killed and eaten.
I feel like it's defensible for a while. It's, you know, it's not Fort Knox, but...
Yeah, if you could take care of the plate glass.
It gets that right mix.
Okay, all right. I support that. I'd be down with that. If I'm in Los Angeles when the zombie apocalypse eventually, you know, inevitably occurs, okay, we'll take care of that. We'll do that.
Plus, you know, just for a laugh.
Yes.
When the end inevitably comes, and the zombies have infiltrated the store, and there's so many of them that exit is really not an option.
Okay.
We could at least, for a glorious final moment, recreate a classic scene from Shaun of the Dead, go to the vinyl section, pull out some Prince albums, not throw them at him, and then throw some other vinyl at him.
I support that. Or we could also reenact the Thriller video. I think
could do all of the above.
The choreography might be a problem, though.
I have participated in a parade in New York City doing the Thriller dance.
So absolutely.
I feel like I'm prepared.
Did you know that that video, when they made that, that video was $1 million?
That's impressive.
That's astounding. Okay, so these are some specific questions, specifically geared towards you.
Let's get specific.
What started this whole chain of events that led you to the Vice President of Special Projects at Virgin Galactic? Was it, like you said when you were a kid, I want to be an astronaut, and it just, you followed that path? Or just, like, what was it that put you here?
Well, I did say that as a little kid, but so does almost every other kid, especially the little boys.
Yeah.
So the moment that I would say everything stems back from would be freshman year at college. Mm-hmm. Towards the beginning of the year, you know, that period when, like, every club is recruiting.
Oh, yes.
And as a freshman, you're like, everything sounds awesome. College is great.
Yeah.
And so you go to the introductory meeting of all these clubs. So I just happened to be walking by in the Science Center, saw a sign for the introductory meeting of SEDS, the Space Club, Students for the Exploration and Development of Space. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that the meeting, like, was in the room I was walking past and started in 5 minutes. And I was like, you know what? I kind of like space. Whatever. I'll check it out. So I went to the club, first introductory meeting. Liked the club, liked the people, liked the activities, got involved. By the end of the year, I think I was an officer, and got exposed to all these, like, actual jobs and careers and projects in the aerospace industry, and I thought it was pretty awesome.
Wow. So before that, honestly, you just had a passing interest in space.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like most people, especially males of that age, I thought NASA was pretty cool. I thought space was pretty cool. I knew I couldn't be an astronaut, as my vision disqualified me. Mm-hmm. And despite having lived in space-friendly communities like Orlando and Houston,
very true.
You know, I think, like a lot of other people, you're like, well, what other job is there in the space industry other than astronaut? Clearly, there are none.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
And
yeah.
had to realize that that is, in fact, wildly inaccurate, and that there are other jobs, and there were cool jobs.
So that's just pretty amazing, because it's like, you know, I'll be honest, you're one of the people that when people start to brag about their friends who do this and that, I'm like, oh, okay, well, check him out. But the only problem was that as soon as I explained that you are the VP of Special Projects at Virgin Galactic, the 99% of the time, the next question is, what does he do? And I've never been able to answer that, ever.
So you had to set up this elaborate ruse.
I made up
where
so...
you invent a podcast.
Yeah. Basically to get this out of you. Thank you. Like, the weight is off my chest. I couldn't tell people what you did when you worked at the Google Lunar X Prize. Because weren't you the something of special project there too?
I was the director and then the senior director for Space Prizes.
Space Prizes. Space Prizes, Special Projects. Okay. I can see how I made that mistake. But again, like, it's like, my friend's a fireman. What does he do? He fights fires. Like, my friend is the head of, like, it's something that you can't really, I couldn't just explain to people. So then I'd basically say, he's the closest thing to an astronaut that any of you will ever meet.
You could say, I project specialness.
Done. Oh, okay, fine. At this point, I've known you for a very long time. I'm 31 years old. I'm accepting that. And if anybody asks any follow-up questions, I'll tell them to just absolutely go fuck themselves.
There you go.
Yeah. So in this path that you are on, what is the most absolutely, utterly amazing, I can't believe this is happening to me moment that has happened since you got into... Yeah. And you have a bunch of them.
I got a bunch of them. I've gotten to fly in weightlessness on parablock flights a bunch of times. Those are in the running.
Yeah.
It probably would be a tie between the night I got my job at XPRIZE at a party with Buzz Aldrin and my later boss, Peter Diamandis.
Very nice. Who does sound like a Bond villain. I love his last name.
And so a tie between that and the time that I got a ride in a T-38, which is a NASA/military trainer for fighter jets and or space shuttles.
And that's the picture that you have of you in the back seat?
That's the picture that someone, even though the picture is quite old, that someone fairly recently posted on Facebook.
Gotcha.
Of me in the back seat of a T-38 going just under the speed of sound.
Very nice. Okay, and what is the best and worst depiction of Harvard in media? What is the best and worst depiction of Mars in media?
Best depiction of Harvard, anything involving Method Man. I just remember it as, you know, my life, man.
So you related to Method Man more than Red Man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Method, I'm more of a Method Man kind of a guy.
As am I. I mean, you know, M-E-T-H-O-D man sounds cooler than R-E-D man.
True.
Okay, so that is the best depiction of Harvard. What is the worst depiction of Harvard? Like, just watched it and this is ridiculous. That's not where the quad is.
Most of them?
Excellent. Yeah, I'll completely accept that. And the best and worst depiction of Mars?
Of Mars specific? I mean, if it was space, I would go with 2001.
As the best or worst?
As absolutely the best depiction of space travel.
So once you get out there, space just looks like a screensaver.
Pretty much. Really slow. Yeah.
Excellent.
You know, I still have never actually seen the Val Kilmer Red Planet, so I can't.
So really you can't answer that. This question yet. Well, we know what you're watching next on Netflix.
I've been told it's worse than Mission to Mars.
Wow. Wait, which is the one where there were dinosaurs on Mars?
That would be, spoiler alert, the end of Mission to Mars has them discovering that life on Earth was seeded by people who also have some sort of establishment on Mars. And so they do show some dinosaurs, although the dinosaurs weren't really on Mars.
Ah. But, gotcha. Yes, I'm sorry, spoilers. Okay,
best depiction of Mars, yes. I mean... In cinema?
Yes.
Non-documentary cinema?
Non-documentary cinema. Yeah, pictures from the Curiosity rover do not count.
Total Recall.
Well, which one? The old one or the new one? Oh, wait, no, they don't go to Mars.
It's not about Mars.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. They mention the word Mars in it somewhere towards the beginning in a very wink-wink sort of...
We're not going there, wink-wink. Yeah, and I haven't seen the second one. I just recently saw the first one, and I don't understand.
Wait, you just recently, like, rewatched or saw for the first time?
I'm realizing that I had never seen it the whole way through. It's one of those movies where you'd catch 10 minutes at a time on TNT on a Sunday, like, over the course of 7 years. And actually sitting down watching it, I'd never seen the whole thing.
Man, this is... shocking news to me. You know how your listeners may not realize, but how I periodically call you out of the blue and I ask you to recount the plot of various Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
Yes.
As we most recently did with
Kindergarten Cop. Of course.
If I had asked you about Total Recall, you could not have answered.
I probably could have filled in the broad strokes, but once we got to the spoiler alert, the chest alien and the technology with the hand, I probably would not have been able to give you that specifics. But after I saw the movie, I read the Philip K. Dick short story on which the movie is based. Have you ever read that by any chance?
We'll remember that for you wholesale?
Yes.
I've read it, but like a decade plus ago. So.
Okay, so let me remind you, it's the first 10 minutes of the movie. There is nothing at all in it about... going to Mars or Quato or or three-breasted prostitutes or anything like that. It is literally, they find out that his memories are real, and then they find out that aliens are real, and if he dies, they destroy the planet. And it's like 30 pages. And I was astonished that then they were just like, yeah, and then this is going to happen, and then that's going to happen. So, yeah, I don't know where the rest of that came from, but it's not a great movie. I don't understand why it is lauded as such. But you say it is the most, you know, most accurate depiction, so I'm now going to flip my script.
Mars is full of triple-breasted horse.
All right, okay, so we're going to Mars. And then we're going to get creeped out and then come back. Okay, so finally, so just recently, this is pretty amazing, and I don't know if you know anything about this or anything, you know, anything specific about it, but Felix Baumgartner, he just did the free fall from a space capsule?
It was from a balloon, a capsule carried under a balloon up to about 128,000 feet.
So he was actually out of the Earth's atmosphere? What does that count as?
He was not officially in space, but he was pretty darn high up. I mean, a normal commercial airliner will fly at something like 35,000 feet.
Gotcha.
So he was many times higher than you fly when you are probably the highest off the above sea level that you will ever be in your life. He was like 3 or 4 times higher than that.
Nice. And he's just like a kind of like a thrill seeker, or does he have any affiliation with any sort of, I don't know.
He is like a skydiver extraordinaire.
Okay.
But then he teamed up with a bunch of people, including some aerospace companies, some aerospace financials, and actually in the move that I found personally most interesting, and like if they ever make a movie about Felix Baumgartner and the Red Bull Stratos program,
yes,
I'm sure that the frame of the story will be sort of the personal relationship between him and this guy, Joseph Kittinger, who was the previous record holder for the highest skydive. He had jumped out from a balloon at like 103,000 feet or something about that, whereas Baumgartner went from 128. And anyway, Kittinger, who's still alive, was like the mission controller for Felix's flight, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Wow.
And pretty classy, both of Felix to invite the previous record holder to be a part of it, and maybe even more classy of the previous record holder to like accept it and to help someone break his record.
Absolutely. Like, that would never happen in King of Kong.
That would never happen in King of Kong.
But yeah, that is pretty amazing. I mean, the story writes itself, but although I will say that Stratos does sound like a Bond villain's satellite that will explode and do something bad to the Earth.
I was thinking more like a dungeon boss in a Zelda game.
Stratos. Okay, I could see that. So, you know, we'll agree to disagree. You think I'm tall, I'm undecided. Stratos sounds like a Bond villain, Stratos sounds like a Zelda boss. Okay. Again, amicably moving forward.
Let's agree to disably.
Alright, so we're gonna disably on this one, and we're gonna move forward to the final moment of digressive obscenity. Will. Define me. I give you a list of words which I had created, and you picked one to define. The word that you picked was Hilgert. So tell me, H-I-L-G-E-R-T, what is Hilgert?
Well, it's an unusual world. It's one I wouldn't be surprised if most of your listeners have not heard before, unless they are classic car aficionados.
Okay.
This is a term that stems from the early 1900s. There was a gentleman, last name of Hilgert, Heinrich Hilgert, from a small town in Germany, who was working an early inventor, entrepreneur, working on cars, working on automobiles.
Okay.
And now, this will seem like a digression, but we'll all tie it together. You are, I take it, familiar with the term and the associated phenomenon of dumpster diving.
Absolutely, dumpster diving. Yeah. I believe we had to read an essay on it in Miss McGinn's English class, I believe.
So for your listeners who may not be familiar, this is the idea of pulling things that are of value to you out of other people's trash. We know one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yeah, found objects, sometimes people call it, yeah.
So Hilgert, working on his early cars, needed some crash test dummies. He would go and retrieve mannequins from the local sort of I guess they weren't really department stores, but the clothiers of, or whatever you want to say, the like tailors
seamstresses,
of the time.
Yeah.
He would find these mannequins that they were no longer using, mm-hmm. and he would request that they donate him, or, depending which version of the story you believe, perhaps steal these mannequins to use as crash test dummies. So essentially the term Hilgert is a noun meaning free dummies.
A free crash test dummy or a free possibly pilfered mannequin?
Free dummies, you know, it's sort of the definition has expanded a little bit over the past 100 years.
Okay, so this actually explains why the crash test dummies, when the lead singer went solo, he had a band called the Hilgerts.
Little known fact.
Wow. Okay, that's an excellent definition. That definitely rounds out the history of it. Okay, well,
it's a term that you could hear again if you're at like a classic car show. People might be talking about it. Or if you're hanging out, perhaps with Liz Lemon's previous boyfriend, Dennis.
Nice.
You know, he might throw that term around. If you are recounting one of my favorite versions of the Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy.
Oh, yes.
You could use that in the punchline would be the wrong word, but sort of towards the end of Deep Thought.
Yeah. The culmination of the Deep Thought.
The culmination of the Deep Thought by Jack Handy.
So on that, the culmination of a deep thought, William Pomeretz, thank you so much for being a part of Digressive Obscenity.
It's been an honor.
It has been a pleasure over here. So again, we're going to disagree. We're gonna part amiably. It's been an honor for you. It's been a pleasure for me. I'm fine with that.
We can disably.
Okay, it's fine. We'll disably.
We're good enough friends.
We're good enough friends. You fucking asshole.
And scene.
Digressive obscenity. Shit, what was I talking about? I remember just a moment ago. I was talking about something, and then I forgot what I was talking about because I was distracted by the guy who did the thing. Digressive obscenity. Shit, what was I talking about?